the record program number 421, titled Pump This, the Schwarzenegger File. This is being recorded on August 18th of the year 2003. And let me remind you that WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs, more recent programs streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older shows available for download only at a longer URL linked to both that website and to the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at SpitfireList.com. Spitfire has the latest pair, the most recently recorded pair of half-hour segments available for download only on Real Audio. WFMU's been having some technical problems. They will have all of the programs up again within a relatively short period of time. Note that in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at SpitfireList.com, there is a written and annotated description of each For the Record program. I am somewhat behind in getting those updated, but they should be completely up to date within a week or two, because I'm closing the gap. Now, Edith Wharton, the late novelist, observed that, quote, "A frivolous society can only achieve dramatic significance through what its frivolity destroys." Perhaps she was thinking of California. If not, she should. Here in California, we are preparing to undergo a recall election for a not particularly exciting governor, Gray Davis, who is not a bad governor. He's just not very exciting or particularly good. But the things that have taken place on Gray Davis's watch are not Gray Davis's fault. One of the people who has stolen the limelight, and the person who is the focal point of this program will probably be the focal point of the next For the Record as well, is, of course, former bodybuilder and Hollywood movie actor Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is running as a Republican. Now, I rarely see movies. Not many movies interest me, and I make a point of not watching television. So what I learn about popular culture, I generally learn from waiting online at the supermarket or the pharmacy. Arnold Schwarzenegger was never on my radar screen. In late 1987, quite by chance, I was on a bus in San Francisco Bay Area, and somebody had left a copy of Sports Illustrated with Arnold Schwarzenegger on the cover. So I picked it up and was leafing through it, mostly for the football news. And I came across the article about Arnold Schwarzenegger. The article was basically talking about Schwarzenegger and other sports figures who had attempted to make it in Hollywood. And on page 84 of Sports Illustrated's issue of December 7th, 1987, there was a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger posing, obviously during his bodybuilding days, in a little Speedo swimsuit. And he was posed against a mountain range. I don't know if it was the Austrian Alps or wherever. That's what it looked like. And he was quite obviously giving the Nazi salute. That is the only interpretation of this particular picture. And I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it because, well, that's life. And Arnold Schwarzenegger was Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I don't particularly care what he was doing one way or another. The article, by the way, is called Pecs Sell Ticks, a reference to Arnold Schwarzenegger's pectoral muscles. It's by a guy named Dan Geringer, G-E-R-I-N-G-E-R. The article begins on page 80, but the picture is on page 84 of Sports Illustrated's issue of December 7th, 1987. And I'm hoping that when the description for FTR 421 goes up on the Spitfire website, we will be able to scan that picture in. In any event, if people think that what I'm about to talk about is insane or crazy, go to a library that carries Sports Illustrated. Get a hold of the issue of December 7th, 1987, and look on page 84. And you will see what it is that first drew Arnold Schwarzenegger to my attention. Now, I thought it was interesting, but I didn't pay much attention to him. A few years later, there began to be discussion of Arnold Schwarzenegger running for governor of California. He is a doctrinaire Republican, so to speak, and it mentioned that his father was a Nazi. At that point, I began to sniff the air and got a familiar odor, and what that odor was is brown and noxious, and there's an awful lot of it around, more and more these days. In any event, I took note of Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I remembered that picture from Sports Illustrated 12/7/87, and looked it up on page 84. And when Arnold Schwarzenegger announced for governor, I began doing political research about the man. Now, we're going to begin with some excerpts from a book that will be heavily featured in this program. It's called Arnold. It's authored by Wendy Lee, L-E-I-G-H. This is an unauthorized biography. It was published in hardcover by Congdon and Weed. Copyright 1990. The ISBN number 0-8655-3216-8. And apparently that article that is on the article that is on page 84 of Sports Illustrated for December 7th, 1987, is anything but an isolated pose. He quite obviously, Schwarzenegger that is giving the Hitler salute. That apparently is not something that was all that unusual for Arnold Schwarzenegger. Turning now to Arnold, the unauthorized biography of Arnold Schwarzenegger, again by Wendy Lee, copyright 1990 by Congdon and Weed, we read, in Arnold, the education of a bodybuilder. Oh, by the way, before I read this passage, I should mention that Park here is a reference to Reg Park. Reg Park was a bodybuilder. He was one of Arnold Schwarzenegger's predecessors as Mr. Universe. One of the things that Schwarzenegger was apparently inspired by was the Hercules movies. He first watched Steve Reeves in the title role, and later Steve Reeves was replaced by Reg Park, who was one of Arnold Schwarzenegger's predecessors as Mr. Universe. He also was a native of South Africa and lived there during the apartheid era. So that's the reference to Park here. Once again, in Arnold, The Education of a Bodybuilder, he wrote that he was overwhelmed by Park's luxurious house, his pool, his antiques, and his servants, and that he felt out of place. He did, however, feel quite at home with the South African system of apartheid. According to Rick Wayne, who was black, when they discussed apartheid, Arnold said he thought that South Africa was right, saying things like, "If you gave these blacks a country to run, they would run it down the tubes," unquote. However, Rick was accustomed to Arnold's reactionary views and quirky ways. He and Arnold had posed together in Munich. In his book, Muscle Wars, A Study of Bodybuilding Politics, Rick recalled that after Arnold had, quote, struck a pose reminiscent of the Nazi salute, unquote, he received less applause from the German audience than he had expected. Arnold's response was to comment to Rick, quote, "These people are nothing without an Austrian to lead them," unquote. Again, an interesting sentiment, and apparently the pose that Schwarzenegger struck on page 84 of Sports Illustrated of 12/7/87 was not really all that unusual. More of some of the subjective valuations, verbal valuations of Arnold Schwarzenegger. The reference here is to Sergio Oliva, a black Brazilian bodybuilder who was one of Schwarzenegger's early rivals. Again, reading from Arnold by Wendy Lee, all through his grueling training, Arnold kept the image of Sergio Oliva in front of him. Black bodybuilder Dave Dupre, who would appear with Arnold years later in Pumping Iron, says Arnold declared one time while working out at Gold's Gym, quote, "Serge is your only black hope to beat me. Black people are inferior. You are not capable of achieving the success of white people. Black people are stupid," unquote. Black people weren't the only target of his venom, for as usual, he was completely democratic in his heckling. According to Dupre, quote, he would make fun of Jews. If anybody looked Jewish, he would point it out and tell them that they were inferior. I would remind him that it was a Jew who had brought him to America. Then he would shut up. Turning now, once again, to Arnold, the unauthorized biography by Wendy Lee. More about some of Arnold Schwarzenegger's off-the-cuff views. Back to the views of Dave Dupre. In Dupre's view, quote, he was always upset that all the black guys were able to go out with all the white girls. He couldn't stand that, unquote.
With regard to Jews, it should be noted, and we're going to discuss that in the second half of the program, that Schwarzenegger has been a very generous contributor to not only the Simon Wiesenthal Center, but to Holocaust education. I would not necessarily view that as significant or representative of Schwarzenegger's views. When we deal with Schwarzenegger's character, one of the things that one should understand is that, the guy is not dumb. He is a very, very smart, far-sighted, and altogether Machiavellian individual. If he's going to set you up, and Schwarzenegger does that a lot, he's going to lead you in the wrong direction. And he is nothing if not deceptive when he chooses to be. And so the pro-Jewish, pro-Holocaust museum, etc., is something certainly that is on the record. In light of evaluating Schwarzenegger, however, somebody who does not have a political history, I think at the very least one needs to be cautious under the circumstances. Now, turning once again to Arnold by Wendy Lee, and we're going to deal some more with Arnold Schwarzenegger's spontaneous verbal value judgments, and again we're going to take a look at some of the posing or Nazi-style posing that Schwarzenegger has engaged in one way or another. And one should note, again, that this is subjective information. We're going to evaluate some of this against harder political information later on in this program and in future broadcasts. Wider here is Joe Wider, a bodybuilder who helped to sponsor Arnold's career in bodybuilding. The Zeller here is Art Zeller, a photographer. On Wider's instructions, Zeller photographed Arnold constantly. Zeller remembers that from the start, Arnold was ready to sacrifice everything to achieve his goals, getting enough sleep, and training hard. Always prepared to admit to his deficiencies and to devote himself to eliminating them, Arnold immediately took posing lessons from Dick Tyler. Tyler, deciding that Arnold merited, quote, heroic, unquote, music, picked for his posing routine, "Thus Spake Zarathustra." Years later, Tyler commented that if Hitler had wanted to advertise the Aryan ideal, Arnold would have been its perfect representative. Tyler's remarks may sound a trifle barbed. However, since 1977, rumors have circulated in the bodybuilding world that during the filming of Pumping Iron, the pseudo-documentary film that transformed Schwarzenegger into a legend, Arnold said he admired Hitler. When contacted for a newspaper article in 1988, George Butler, the producer and director of the film and still a close friend of Arnold's today, admitted that during the filming of Pumping Iron, Arnold definitely did say that he admired Hitler. Butler then conceded that the remark was cut from the final version of the film, adding that Arnold expressed his admiration of, quote, Hitler and Kennedy in almost the same breath as people who were leaders, unquote. When asked why Arnold admired Hitler, Butler replied that the context in the film was that Arnold was saying he had, quote, always wanted to be remembered like the most famous people in history, like Jesus and so on. And I think his admiration is for people who were so striking that they would be remembered always, unquote. Skipping down, Manfred Tellig, T-H-E-L-L-I-G, who worked with Arnold in Munich, offers a similar interpretation. According to Tellig, Arnold, quote, definitely admires the Teutonic period of the Third Reich. He just loved those leftover relics of the Third Reich in Munich, those Teutonic statues, unquote. He added that Arnold would say, quote, if I had lived at that time, I would have been one of those Teutonic breeders, unquote, but explains, whenever, again quoting, whenever he opened his mouth and it sounded like, oh, there is a neo-Nazi, this was just playing Tarzan. It wasn't serious, unquote. It must also be pointed out that the second of the four most important women whom Arnold has loved is half-Jewish, and that he has sustained deep and sincere friendships with many Jews, some of whom are his closest business aides. He also is on record as a friend of the Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles and a fellow Austrian Simon Wiesenthal himself. Arnold attended his birthday celebration, as well as other Wiesenthal Center events. There are, nevertheless, witnesses over the years who have seen Arnold break into the Sieg Heil salute and play his records of Hitler's speeches. Arnold responded to this issue during a 1989 Penthouse interview with journalist Sharon Churcher. According to Churcher, A former associate of Arnold's during the 70s had heard from a mutual acquaintance that Arnold had Nazi paraphernalia in his apartment. According to the associate, Arnold's reaction at that time was to claim through pumping iron producer George Butler that his interest, quote, was only that of a student, unquote. Butler, professing to have forgotten the above exchange, says that he had never seen any Nazi paraphernalia at Arnold's house. The article goes on to quote Arnold as saying, quote, I totally hate the Nazi period, unquote. He adds, again quoting, when you come from a background like Germany or Austria, then you are sometimes joked about and people give you sometimes gifts that maybe had something to do with that Nazi time, unquote. When asked if he had kept any such presents, Arnold replied, quote, no, I am so much against that time period. I despise it, unquote. There is yet another possibility. As one bodybuilder who observed Arnold in America doing a Sieg Heil salute commented, quote, it was expected of him, unquote. Arnold personified Aryan supremacy and Germanic strength of will. To top that, his father had been a member of the Nazi Party. Both his heritage and his image were inescapable. Inescapable, but not ineradicable. Yet Arnold, far from underplaying his roots, embraced and advertised them. Essentially always an entertainer, a performer who gloried in satisfying his audience, Arnold must have known that the Nazi aura surrounding him did not displease his admirers. After all, the goal of many bodybuilders is to carve for themselves bodies befitting a master race, and to that end, power and dominance are valued above all. Bodybuilding journalist Dick Tyler, who is Joe Weider's West Coast editor, and who met Arnold during his first months in America, sums up the allure of the jackboot in bodybuilding terms, quote, I used to tell bodybuilders, when you go out there, think of yourself as the very best. There is no other. It will come across to the audience, and they love it. And that's why they're there. They are sitting there with their skinny bodies, and they're looking up at that stage, looking up at their heroes, unquote. They want that arrogance, and Arnold knew this. You didn't have to give any advice to him about being arrogant, unquote. All in all, allegations of Arnold's veneer of Nazism probably didn't hurt him in the unique arena that is bodybuilding. I would note in passing that traditional Nazi culture not only has a very tangible sort of homoerotic quality to it, but there's a preoccupation with the male physiology, and so the whole view there of bodybuilding and Arnold Schwarzenegger is certainly keeping with the visual aspects of some of the important elements of Nazi culture. Now, one of the things that is important to ask ourselves here, and that is whether or not there is anything more to this than simple tastelessness and posing. I would note that for someone that is as fond of Simon Wiesenthal and Holocaust remembrance and other things, these are certainly examples of striking tastelessness. Now, whether or not there's anything more to that remains to be determined. We're going to turn once again to Arnold by Wendy Lee, and there's at least one aspect of Arnold Schwarzenegger's career, and I would note that the man is not only running for to be head of state of the sixth largest economy in the world, but he has no political history. He's never been an office holder, and so in terms of evaluating who he is, what his political roots are, I don't think that a thorough scrutiny of his background under the circumstances is at all beside the point. In fact, I think it is the point. Turning once again to Arnold, by Wendy Lee, one of the aspects of Arnold Schwarzenegger's career that he has never really explained satisfactorily, and this stands out rather dramatically, is his enthusiastic championing of Kurt Waldheim. Kurt Waldheim was a former Secretary General of the United Nations. He also was elected President of Austria. He also was a Nazi war criminal. He had been a Nazi intelligence officer, had assisted in some brutal anti-partisan programs in the former Yugoslavia during World War II, and in the deportations and subsequent executions of the Jewish population of Greece, as well as of the former Yugoslavia. Nonetheless, Arnold Schwarzenegger remained an enthusiastic champion of Kurt Waldheim. He campaigned for Kurt Waldheim when he was running for president of Austria, and he invited Kurt Waldheim to his wedding to Maria Shriver. And the interesting thing about that is that Arnold Schwarzenegger has never recanted his support for Kurt Waldheim. I would note in passing, and we're going to come to this perhaps in the next broadcast, that Kurt Waldheim, interestingly enough, got his start in the post-World War II Austrian government as a result of the influence of Fritz Mölden, last name M-O-L-D-E-N. Now, Mölden was a former agent for the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, in World War II, and he also was the son-in-law of Alan Dulles. Alan Dulles, former director of the CIA, was the person who invested Bush family money on behalf of Nazi Germany, later was one of the key liaison personnel with the Galen Organization, and had much to do with the post-war resuscitation of Third Reich elements. We've spoken about Alan Dulles at great length, and I would note that it was his son-in-law who was responsible for Kurt Waldheim's elevation into the post-World War II Austrian government. Of Schwarzenegger's support for Kurt Waldheim, we read, "For there was one flaw in the otherwise perfect Shriver-Schwarzenegger nuptials, one false note that threatened to cloud the brightness of the day. Amid all the good wishes and hopes for future happiness, the love and the kindness, a dark shadow was cast by a gift from someone whom many people had identified as evil. The gift was two life-size papier-mâché dolls fabricated by artist Christa Müller, replicas of Arnold, dressed in lederhosen, carrying Maria, dressed in a dirndl. They were sent from Arnold's Austrian homeland by Kurt Waldheim. The dolls, prominently displayed at the wedding reception, assumed a slightly sinister air, as if they might suddenly open up to reveal the grinning specter of Kurt Waldheim lurking inside their shells. After all, only the day before, the press had carried yet another story about Waldheim's duplicity, his concealment of his Nazi past, and evidence of Nazi atrocities with which he may have been connected. Arnold, naturally, was not responsible for being the recipient of a gift from a leading Austrian politician, indeed, one who might well in the near future be elected president of Arnold's native Austria. As Arnold pointed out later, he had, after all, out of courtesy, invited Waldheim to his wedding, along with Pope John Paul II and President Reagan. Waldheim had now reciprocated with a gift. By the way, note in passing, not only John Paul II, but also Ronald Reagan. There may be more to that than pure coincidence here. On the other hand, perhaps it was mere courtesy. Continuing. Up until the moment that Waldheim's gift was brought into the reception, the day had been close to perfect. The bride was beautiful, the groom handsome, the guests glittering, the reception superb. All in all, the gift might have passed relatively unnoticed had it not been for Arnold himself. In a gesture that perhaps was a defiant declaration of independence, and that, according to one guest, caused Jackie Kennedy Onassis to pale, Arnold spoke the following words, later recorded by wedding guest Andy Warhol in his diaries, quote, "My friends don't want me to mention Kurt's name because of all the recent Nazi stuff and the UN controversy, but I love him, and Maria does too, and so, thank you, Kurt," unquote. CBS's Terry Smith, also a wedding guest, confirms that Warhol's recorded comments encapsulate the gist of Arnold's remarks. Later, in what was described as an awkward moment, unquote, Arnold praised Kurt Waldheim, adding that he was a victim of bad press. According to another guest, Arnold's friend Richard Burkholder, quote, "He, Arnold, wished Kurt Waldheim was at the wedding. He also assured everyone that Waldheim hadn't done what he had been accused of." By the way, I would add that Schwarzenegger has never withdrawn these remarks, which is at best impolitic, and he then campaigned for Arnold Schwarzenegger and allowed his picture to be used on posters for Arnold Schwarzenegger. Skipping down. In the fall of 1988, when asked by journalist Sharon Churcher about his allegiance to Waldheim, Arnold refused to characterize his meeting with Waldheim as bad judgment. "Arnold is not, and has never been, responsible for his father's political affiliations. However, one can't help wondering why Arnold, rather than repudiating Waldheim for his duplicity in concealing his Nazi past, rose up so publicly in defense of him. And there are many, allegedly including Maria Schreiber, who wish that Arnold had followed a different path. Unquote. I would note in this regard that one of the aspects of the Third Reich, and to keep in mind as a paradigm here, the Mafia, because it perpetuates itself, in decades-long, generations-long, underground, and altogether effective, and when need be, deadly fashion. There is a great deal of evidence that the Third Reich basically did the same thing, using its consummate economic power, the aggregate of five of the principal tides of capital flow in the 20th century, as I've discussed in For the Record program number 99, and using the Flight Capital Organization, an underground political apparatus headed up by Hitler deputy Martin Bormann, and with its tremendous connections to the intelligence communities of many countries, including access, as we now know, to the former Soviet Union, it was able to perpetuate itself. This is not to say that if you run into a German or a Nazi, or a German or Austrian, you conclude that they are a Nazi, but the fact of the matter is that one can think of the Third Reich sort of as the German or Austrian mafia. If you go to Italy, you're not going to see the mafia, and it would be unfair to characterize an Italian as a mafioso. However, if you go to Italy and start nosing around and start asking questions and making serious inquiries, you will see the mafia once. There are indications, in fact, that Arnold Schwarzenegger may, and this is obviously in an interrogatory sense, may be part of an underground Reich and specifically a successor to his father. I want to note this is conjectural, but for people who might think this is superfluous, again, get Sports Illustrated December 7th, 1987, and look on page 84 and ask yourself if this was a man that you would want as governor. Inside two of this program, we're going to deal with Arnold Schwarzenegger's father and with his wartime record, and we're also going to deal with the Nazi plans to go underground. By way of concluding the discussion on this side, first of all, of the city of Graz, which was where Arnold Schwarzenegger's father had lived, where he became chief of police after serving in the police force there under Hitler. Speaking of Hitler's personal regard for Graz, in fact, Hitler was so gratified by the Grazer's enthusiasm that he awarded the city an honorary title, Die Stadt der Erhebung, E-R-H-E-B-U-N-G, the town of the elevation. Austrians even now remember Hitler's triumphant entry into Graz, how the crowds mobbed the street, climbing lampposts for a glimpse of Der Führer, shouting Sieg Heil with strident fervor. And we're going to deal with Gustav Schwarzenegger, Schwarzenegger's father, and some interesting aspects of his background. One of the details, and it is a detail that is worth noting here, is the influence of Gustav Schwarzenegger, ostensibly nothing but a small-town police chief, in the post-war Austrian army. According to Arnold, turning once again to the Wendy Lee unauthorized biography, according to Arnold, Gustav had smoothed the path for his younger son by using his influence to have him stationed at a camp near Graz. He had also pulled strings so that Arnold, characteristically impressed by the size and power of tanks, could be a tank driver. Arnold claims that, thanks to Gustav's influence, the Austrian army made an exception to the required tank driver's minimum age, lowering it from 21 to 18, thus enabling him to fulfill his ambition. Driving a tank provided Arnold with a tremendous sense of power, and in Arnold, the Education of a Bodybuilder, he describes how much he loved the recoil of the guns when they fired, and how it fed something in his nature that was moved by demonstrations of strength. Sometimes, though, army life proved to be dangerous. Once he parked a tank but forgot to put the brake on. The tank rolled into the river, and according to Arnold, there were no consequences. Skipping down, it was while in the Austrian army and going AWOL that Arnold competed in his first major German bodybuilding competition. He, Arnold, knew exactly what he wanted, and he had taken great risks to obtain it. For despite being the product of Gustav's school of obedience and discipline, Arnold, as he would many times in his career, had gambled. To compete in Stuttgart, he had gone AWOL from the Austrian army. Another famous son, George W. Bush, also went AWOL. We'll talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger and his father and his post-war career. This, however, concludes side one of For the Record program number 421, Pump This, the Schwarzenegger file, being recorded on August 18th of 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.